The year was 1950, the beginning of the Cold War. The Soviet Union and the United States were on a collision course for World War III. Both countries had nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them with long-range bombers. Since 1945, both the United States and the Soviet Union were prepared for nuclear war. Both had prepared elaborate radar networks to give warning of impending attack. This was the backdrop when a U.S. Navy reconnaissance plane was shot down over the Baltic Sea off the coast of Latvia. This was the first reported Cold War incident involving an aircraft. Forty-two years later, a Wisconsin woman is in Russia. She wants to know what really happened to the missing plane's crew.
Any of you remember? He would be 70 now.
She wants to know what happened to her husband, Navy Lieutenant Robert Reynolds.
And I do happen to have a rather firm conviction that there's a good chance that my husband and some of his crew lived and are still alive even today.
Tonight, the story of one woman's quest to find answers to a 42-year-old mystery. It's a story about government secrets, government documents, and a search for the truth. It's the story of one woman's belief that Bob Reynolds might still be alive.
This program is made possible by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through the Central Educational Network, with additional support from Carlson Travel Network in Madison.
Кооператив «Огонек» качественно изготовит и установит в срок металлическую дверь.
August 1992, Wisconsin Public Television follows Jane Reynolds Howard and her daughter Carolyn on a search in the former Soviet Union.
This is Radio Moscow World Service. I'm Larry Sinclair. 42 years ago, Navy Lieutenant Junior Grade Robert Reynolds said goodbye to his wife Jane and their 3.5-year-old daughter. And at the time, they were expecting a second child. Now, to her knowledge, her husband's plan was to fly on a routine training mission over Western Europe. But in April of 1950, she received the news that Soviet fighter planes had shot down the plane that her husband was on over the Baltic Sea. There was no survivors, were reported, of the 10-member crew. Can you tell me the day, if it's possible, when the Navy came to your doorstep to give you the sad news?
So I kept a very strong hold on myself in the daytime because, after all, my 3-year-old was asking, why doesn't Daddy come back? Why doesn't he come back? She was used to his going away every so often for about 10 days, but she had more or less internalized that at the end of 10 days, he came back every time, but this time he didn't. And I couldn't say, well, maybe your dad's at the bottom of the Baltic Sea, or maybe he's a prisoner, or I don't know what. I couldn't say anything other than, well, Daddy's flight took a little longer than he planned, and he'll be back after a bit. Through all this time, I was never able to tell her anything definitive.
Well, will you ask him if he finds a hug?
Valerie Rudnev is a reporter for Izvestia, formerly the mouthpiece of the Communist Party. By August of 1992, the newspaper was now an independent. Rudnev has written several articles on the Reynolds case. Ksenia Nikonodrova is the interpreter.
I have come here to find out if my husband is alive. If he is not alive, then what happened to him? What has happened to the other members of his crew?
Хочу просто вам по-человечески помочь.
And I would like to help you as a person, as a human being.
В поисках следов
To find the trace of your husband.
И еще мне поразило Вот ваша вера, вот на протяжении длительного времени, ваша вера, что ваш муж, возможно, жив, вы ищете его до сих пор.
Many years have passed, but still you believe, you have faith that your husband could probably be alive, and you're still looking for him, you want to find traces of
Та русской жены.
He thought that was a characteristic of Russian wives, not American.
I have discovered in the last week that apparently Carolyn and I are the first American women to come over here in this quest.
Ну, получилось так, что я обнаружила.
And I agree with a lot of the things that my mother says, and I understand how she feels.
Я согласна со многими вещами, которые говорила моя мать, и я понимаю, какие чувства она испытывает.
And of course, I want to know the truth.
Я тоже хочу знать правду, вы должны меня понять тоже.
And if my father is alive, of course, I want to meet him.
И, конечно, если он жив, я тоже хочу с ним встретиться.
Regardless of the situation.
Несмотря ни на что.
But there's a part of me that wants to get on with things. My mother's way of handling pain is to rationalize and go on and on and on and on. And that's fine, that's her way. My way of dealing with the situation is quite different than hers. I feel the pain.
While in Russia, Jane Reynolds Howard and Carolyn want to talk to as many journalists as will listen to get the word out. The word about American POW MIAs in the former Soviet Union. This is Andrei Oliverov of Radio Russia.
My father was doing work for his government, thinking he was doing the right thing. Possibly the person who shot the airplane down was working for his government, which is your government, and thought he was doing the right thing. Neither of them, as far as I am concerned, from my viewpoint today, should have been doing what they were doing. So, you know, it's again about politics and about governments, about people not trusting each other and spying on each other.
With all the obstacles, all the walls that Jane Reynolds Howard and her daughter Carolyn must climb, it's tempting to ask, why in the world are they doing this? Why are they trying to trace events that happened 42 years ago? To understand why and how these two women came to be in Russia, we need to go back in time. We need to go back to the beginning of this story. On Saturday, April 8th, 1950, Robert Reynolds and nine other crew members departed an Air Force base in Wiesbaden, West Germany. They were flying an unarmed U.S. Navy PB-4Y2 privateer aircraft, like this one. The official flight route of the plane was described as a training flight between Germany and Denmark. U.S. Air Force radio channels lost contact. Four Soviet fighter planes intercepted the privateer and shot it down around 5:30 p.m. Moscow time. The Soviets said the U.S. aircraft was 21 kilometers into Soviet-controlled territory on the coast of Latvia. At the time, Jane Reynolds was the mother of three-year-old Christina and 10 weeks pregnant with Carolyn.
I didn't want to believe that he was gone for good, you know, as long as I was carrying his baby.
The crew of 10 was declared missing in action for 1 year. They were declared presumed dead on April 9th, 1951.
At the end of 2 years, they sent the second in command from the squadron out from Washington, and he said to me, you know, we haven't had any real word about them. In 2 years' time, we have to assume that they're dead, and we think you should get on with your life.
Eventually, Jane Reynolds did get on with life. In 1955, she married Edward Howard. He raised Tina and Carolyn as his own, and together they had four more children. Their Baha'i religious faith took them to Brazil for 14 years, where she did missionary work. The second marriage lasted almost 30 years, until Howard's death in 1985.
This is my son, Bruce, whose father is over here. This is Edward J. Howard, my second husband.
In August 1991, Jane Reynolds Howard received in the mail a letter and a newspaper article that turned her world upside down.
And I read the article, and it mentioned his specific plane and the date and everything three times. And the third time it said the Defense and State Departments had declared from the beginning that the men probably were picked up by the Soviets. And when I read that, I thought, oh my God, you know, that's not what they told us. And then all of a sudden it hit me that he even could possibly still be alive, you know.
Ever since, Jane Reynolds Howard has been tireless in her efforts to find out what happened to her first husband 42 years ago. She's made phone calls. She's sought out connections. She's written to the CIA, state and defense departments, and has received in return once classified government documents.
There are things surfacing now that indicate that the men very definitely, eight of them survived.
Among the documents she's received are the minutes of a top secret Navy Board of Investigation that convened 6 days after Reynolds' plane was shot down. It turns out that the plane was on a top-secret special electronic search project mission. These missions required the plane to fly close to or inside the border to force Soviet air defenses to reveal their radar signals to monitoring devices inside the plane. Officially, the plane was supposed to stay 20 miles off the coast of Soviet-occupied territory in the Baltics. But these so-called ferret missions often required flying over Soviet territory in order to detect Soviet radar systems.
There was this Cold War going on for a long, long time, and I don't think the American people, they know the word Cold War, but they don't know what that really means in terms of people out there representing our government, doing things that we would consider clandestine.
The Navy investigation revealed that Robert Reynolds was the intelligence officer on this flight. He also handled the navigational duties. 8 days after the plane was declared missing, a life raft was recovered from the Baltic Sea. A second damaged and submerged life raft was picked up by a ship on April 21st. In 1950, the board declared, "There is no conclusive evidence now available as to whether the personnel of the missing aircraft are deceased or alive." This Navy Board of Investigation was kept secret for 25 years.
I had no idea, none whatsoever. I was exceedingly naive.
While these documents detail what the mission was about, other documents suggest that some of the crew of the Navy privateer survived the crash and were captured by the Soviets.
Oh, yeah, that's CIA.
A CIA memo dated May 17, 1950, states the American flyers were saved but will never be repatriated. Another CIA document states that the crew members were believed to be in Vorkuta, September 1950. Vorkuta is a Soviet prison labor camp located in the Arctic Circle. In January 1954, a Navy memorandum states, "It appears that the Soviets have salvaged the electronic equipment from an American aircraft. This may be the U.S. Navy PB-4Y-2, which crashed in April 1950 in the Baltic. In view of the successful salvaging and operation of the electronic equipment, there exists the possibility that some or all of the crew were taken into custody and are being held by the Soviets.
John Noble of Detroit on left and Private Marchuk of Norristown, Pennsylvania, held for years in Russian labor camps after their release in West Berlin.
Then in January 1955, two American citizens who had been imprisoned in Soviet labor camps were released. Although they had not been imprisoned together, both said the same thing, that members of the Navy privateer had been captured by the Soviets. John Noble claimed that 8 of the 10 crew members survived the crash and were being held in Vorkuta, the Soviet prison labor camp.
Where did you hear about these 8 flyers still being alive?
I heard about them in Potsdam, the camp, by a Yugoslav who told me that he met them.
Noble said a German Yugoslav told him the 8 American flyers in Vorkuta were picked up by the Soviet Coast Guard after the crash, and that the American flyers were worried because they knew that they were officially dead, and they believed that the Soviet authorities would see to it that they disappeared.
Well, do you believe this man's word? Do you think they're alive?
Well, I'm not sure if they're alive nowadays, but anyhow, he met them, as he said, in the years 1952, I guess it was.
So do you think that the Russians would have killed them or have let them die since that time?
No, actually I don't. If these people really were saved, then I think they still ought to be living, if they did not die by some natural death.
Upon his arrival in the U.S., Noble was debriefed by the U.S. State Department. The names of all 10 crew members of the privateer were mentioned to Noble. Only the name Reynolds was familiar to him, but he couldn't recall how or why the name was familiar. 6 years after the plane was shot down, the U.S. State Department sent a note to the Soviet Union. The note said that the U.S. government is informed and compelled to believe that the Soviet government has had and continues to have under detention one or more members of the crew of a United States Navy privateer. None of this information was known to Jane Reynolds Howard before August of 1991. By the mid-50s, she had remarried and moved, and her new friends were not familiar with her past. No one from the government ever told her that her first husband may have been captured by the Soviets.
I have to admit, I have very mixed feelings about the government lying to me back then.
With this new information and the help of an organization called the ARC Project, a story and a photograph of Robert Reynolds was placed in a Russian newspaper in December of 1991. Jane Reynolds Howard asked the Russian people to reveal any information about her missing husband.
The first ad, the Christmas Day ad, brought an answer from someone who had himself been a prisoner in the Gulag for trying to get out of Russia. He had shared a cell with a man who was considerably older than himself, who in the course of time told him about his experiences in the system. And he mentioned that he had been 20 years earlier in a cell with an American pilot by the name of Reynolds, who had been shot down in the Baltic Sea and been recruited by the KGB. And finally, they couldn't break him and so forth. And so he was sent to this prison, psychiatric hospital, KGB prison, in Sichevka, which is about 230, 250 kilometers northwest of Moscow.
The FBI created a computer-age photograph of the young Robert Reynolds to show what he might look like today at age 70. These pictures were shown on local and national television and published in Russian newspapers with appeals for information. The technique worked. There is a retired Russian general who wants to talk to Jane.
He sent a feeler through somebody who came to the States. He sent a feeler asking whether I would want to see him, would want to know what he could tell me.
And she has written letters to the Russian president, Boris Yeltsin, requesting his help. Her hopes were given a boost by the Russian president in June of 1992.
Russian President Boris Yeltsin arrives in the U.S. today, and among the things he'll be questioned about, his announcement Friday that 12 American pilots shot down in the 1950s were held in Soviet prisons and psychiatric hospitals. Jane Reynolds Howard of Middleton, Wisconsin, believes her first husband, Lieutenant Robert Reynolds, was part of that group.
It's very refreshing to have a boost from that side in the sense that they do admit to having had Americans over there. This is the first time since heaven knows when that they have admitted that, and it's forced our government to recognize that this is really true and this is really valid.
Her belief that Bob Reynolds might still be alive is fueled in part by the ARC Project. The ARC Project is an organization that searches for POW MIAs in the former Soviet Union. ARC Project co-founder Misha Kachikov spent 15 years in the Soviet prison system as a political dissident. He is now a visiting professor in human rights at Harvard University. Two other ARC Project members are Susan Messenai and Boris Yuzin. Yuzin is a former KGB agent. While stationed in San Francisco, he disclosed KGB dirty tricks in the U.S. to the FBI. When he returned to Moscow, he was arrested and imprisoned. Yuzin and Kachikov were cellmates for 8 months. Yuzin was released from prison in February 1992 and began to work for the ARC Project in Moscow. In June, the ARC Project was able to find a 75-year-old American defector by the name of Victor Hamilton. Hamilton had been rotting away for 30 years in a Russian psychiatric hospital near Moscow. When Susan Messenai found Hamilton, she thought it might be Bob Reynolds.
Well, the tip was that there's an American by the letter K in a psychiatric prison hospital. And Boris Yuzin, our associate director, had traced it. My hope, he said, you know, we're going, and I said, good, you know, because I'm thinking Bob. And it's not very often that you are even allowed into a psychiatric prison hospital where they know that you're looking for live Americans, right? So yes, that's who I was hoping it would be.
It wasn't Bob Reynolds. But the fact that an American was found in a Russian psychiatric hospital gave hope to Jane Reynolds Howard, hope that somewhere in Russia, Bob Reynolds might also be alive. So in August 1992, Jane Reynolds Howard continued her quest. She left Wisconsin and headed for Russia. She arrived in Moscow on the first year anniversary of the failed coup attempt against Mikhail Gorbachev. The end of the Cold War had opened new doors to the former Soviet Union, and possibly some answers to what happened to Bob Reynolds. She traveled with her daughter Carolyn and Susan Messenai of the ARC Project. They were met at the airport by Boris Yuzin.
Oh, this is beautiful, thank you.
We're the first American women to come over here, you know, in search of her father and my first husband.
Bob Reynolds' fate has several possibilities. He was killed in the crash. He survived the crash, only to die years later in a prison camp. He survived the crash and a prison sentence for espionage and was released into Russian society. If Reynolds did survive a prison sentence, he may have remarried. Maybe even had another family.
I'm hoping that's what might have happened for Bob, you know, that he had a little bit of happiness and family life and a good woman. And That would be wonderful as far as we're concerned, but I think Carolyn wants to know if she has any brothers or sisters over here.
He's alive out there, and that's how these stories.
In a quiet moment, Carolyn tries to explain to producer Steve Jandasek what it's like to believe one thing for 42 years, that her father is dead, only to have to rethink that belief today.
It's confusing, to say the least. And it's not easy for me to talk about, and I go through various emotions at different times. Sometimes I'm sad about it, sometimes I'm hopeful about it, sometimes I get angry, sometimes I just get plain confused, anxious, at times it's agonizing. It's hard to describe. I mean, to have thought all my life that my father was dead was one thing. It was difficult enough to not have had a chance to meet him, and then all of a sudden in the last few months to find out that he could be alive. And if he is, God knows in what condition, hopefully good, it's hard for me to accept that. It's difficult.
Early in her stay in Russia, Jane Reynolds Howard meets Igor Provalov. Provalov attended dissident meetings in Moscow at an early age.
Know that it took a great deal of moral courage to come forward under circumstances like he did and be so outspoken and clear about what he knew.
Provalov is the key to Jane Reynolds Howard's belief that her husband might still be alive. He is the one who answered the ad in the Russian newspaper. He says that he had a cellmate by the name of Alexander. Alexander told him that he once shared a cell with an American pilot named Reynolds, and that the KGB tried to recruit Reynolds for espionage, but he refused.
He didn't know your husband personally, but according to the talk
Mr.
of the
Alexander.
Yes, mm-hmm. of his friend, he wants to tell you that your husband was a real man, and real soldier, and very brave person, a real American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were not able to make him change his mind.
Yeah,
and his.
Ask him how long Mr. Alexander was with Bob.
Как долго мистер Александр был с Бобом? День, месяц?
Нет, они были всего где-то около недели.
A week.
A week. Uh-huh.
Дело в том, что они попали туда совершенно случайно. Это была, видимо, чья-то непозволительная оплошность. Но они случаются...
Вместе получились,
да? Да-да-да.
He is saying that the fact that they were put in one, let's say, room
cell.
Or cell, mm-hmm. yes, that was a mistake on somebody's part. They were not supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
To put an American and Russian person together. So.
According to Provalov, as soon as the mistake was realized, Alexander was sent away. Reynolds stayed at Suchevka.
He wants to make a point that is that Suchevka, a special psychiatric
yeah,
hospital, was a real special hospital.
Yeah, I know.
It was meant to isolate the person from the world, and nobody was
ever to know about
yep.
them.
Alexander told Provalov about Reynolds in the late 70s. Alexander is now probably dead. Provalov says most people don't survive long periods in psychiatric hospitals.
What about my father? Could he still be alive there?
А как вы думаете, ее отец может быть жив? В принципе, есть такая или нет?
В принципе, всегда такая надежда есть. Хотя один шанс из тысячи, но существует.
There is always a hope, but it could be like one chance in a thousand.
But the way things are coming out bit by bit by bit, it doesn't diminish my hope at all.
The Suchevka Hospital for the Criminally Insane opened in 1956 as a KGB special psychiatric prison. Bob Reynolds' plane was shot down in 1950. Early reports from John Noble had some of the crew members imprisoned at the Soviet labor camp, Vorkuta. But this is where Igor Provalov says her husband was kept in 1958. She is met by the chief doctor, Mikhail Fedorov. Fedorov says that all of the personal files from 1956 to 1978 have all been moved to a central archival location in a branch of the Ministry of Interior. The doctor says he doesn't know whether or not those files are stored somewhere or destroyed. He says he does have history of illness files from 1956 through 1958, but there are no photos in those files.
Oh, this passport, it goes also.
There are several reasons why a search of Russian archives is difficult. Here at Sichevka, the main card catalog is in alphabetical order by last name. The problem is American names could have been changed to Russian, making it almost impossible to track. Also, the cards can easily be removed, never to return. After looking at the records, the group walks to a unit of the hospital where patients who are on heavy medication are kept. Most of the patients are younger, under 35. Reynolds Howard looks for any older patients who might remember her husband.
Do any of you remember? He would be 70 now. Explain this. It's the way he looked at 29. This is the way he looked at 29. This is my daughter and Bob Reynolds' daughter. So she's looking for her father and I'm looking for my husband. Спасибо.
Next up, a place called the workshop. Dr. Fedorov and Yuzin select a few of the patients and bring them into a room to meet Reynolds Howard.
Джейн Рейнольдс и ее дочка Кэролин.
Ну, может быть, кто-то из вас слышал, скажем, от друзей своих или на этапах, других больниц. Мы старая больница, мы стараемся из того, кто здесь присутствует для вас и вас.
Знаете, наверное, что было сообщение Ельцина о том, что в 50-х годах было четыре американца.
No one appeared to recognize the photo of Bob Reynolds.
Everybody, thanks. Bye-bye.
As Dr. Fedorov hustles everyone to the next location, Carolyn lags behind.
I don't know what I feel. I just am compelled to keep coming back here. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it is. It's just this gut feeling that I can't leave. It's like I have this need to look at everyone. That if my father was indeed a prisoner here, I'm stepping on grounds he stepped on. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I live in Moscow.
Jane Reynolds Howard's journey continues. She boards a late-night train headed for Riga, Latvia. An interview with a retired Russian general awaits her there.
Okay.
On the way to Riga, Carolyn reflects on her visit to Sichevka.
Well, when we were going through the wards where the men were sedated, that was the part that was the saddest. And I remember going from room to room and looking through the windows and looking in to the cells and imagining whether my father had been there and been through that situation and at some point been in a bed like that with that terrible despair in their, that look in their eyes. The first time I went back to the gate and I couldn't pull myself away, I had to go back. I stood there at the gate looking at all the different men. There must have been 100 of them there. And they were looking at me, and some of them spoke English, a few words of English, and some of them asked for cigarettes, things like that. But while I was standing there, one of the men passed me a note, which I immediately put in my pocket, and then later opened it up and looked at it, and it was written in Russian, and later I gave it to a translator, and he said that what was written down there was information concerning two people that were in there and that had been put in there for political reasons, not for sickness.
I feel very good about going to Sichevka because until yesterday I had only a negative feeling about Sichevka. I knew only the part about when it was a KGB hospital that, you know, used drugs and so forth on the prisoners, and that was back during the time when Bob was there. I guess I was trying to absorb a little bit of the feeling of the place. I realize it's changed since the time that Bob was there. A lot of those buildings weren't even built at that time, but I came across a bough of evergreen, and I picked a piece off of it to take home with me as a remembrance of the place. I don't know what made me do it, but it was a part of nature, and I know Bob loved the outdoors and loved farming and so forth and loved just walking in the woods and things like that. And I thought, who knows, maybe the tree that came from was in existence when he was there. Probably a long shot wish, but.
Tomorrow in Riga, Jane Reynolds Howard will talk with General Fedor Shinkarenko.
The general says that he is the person who gave the order for Bob's plane to be shot down. I want to find out if I can whether this was policy that came down from Joe Stalin, which I assume it was. I want to reiterate what I said in my letter to him, that I have never had any hard feelings against the Russian people or even people in the military and so forth who had to follow orders that they might not have liked to have followed.
А вас я принимаю с удовольствием, а теперь представляю вот жена.
He said that what happened, a pilot wasn't guilty of, you're not guilty of, a daughter isn't guilty of, it's governments.
Before going into the details of the privateer incident, General Shinkarenko wants to give a little background. He states that on February 23, 1950, three American planes flew over the Baltic states.
Moscow looked at all these reports of planes coming over and made the decision that evening of February 23rd that they had to do something to stop the flights and gave the order to all pilots that were going up to signal these planes to come down to open fire.
The new order was to open fire if American planes did not respond to signals to land. These orders were good only for planes that were flying over Soviet territory, not international waters, according to the general.
Значит, я получил приказание.
Сейчас я это перевожу для него.
Да.
He said the planes flew over Latvia, they flew over the city. He said they didn't just fly over here, they flew over Leningrad, they flew over Minsk, they flew over Kiev, over the cities themselves, that far inland, that they even flew over Sverdlovsk, which is right in the heart of Russia.
As a result of these flights over Soviet territory, General Shinkarenko said he was ordered to develop a crack group of his best pilots to protect against border offenses. He was commander of this special force that was formed near the end of March 1950. Bob Reynolds' flight may have been the first to encounter General Shinkarenko's new border defense.
And then 6 a.m. on the morning of April 8th, the weather was very bad. The Baltic Sea was covered with fog. There were huge waves. It was very rough seas.
Да, по локатору.
And
по радиотехнической станции.
He came, he was called up to the central office and on the radar saw that a plane crossed from West Germany through the neutral waters and entered the territorial waters of the Soviet Union.
Садится под Москвой, в Клин, то есть Калинин. Там погода получше была.
It got to the point where they had to do something about the intruding plane.
As the general tells his story, there appears to be some confusion about what type of plane was shot down.
He wants to check and see, was it a B-29?
No, it was not. It was a Navy plane, and Andrei Vyshinsky indicated that to Admiral Kirk the next morning and called him on the carpet about it.
То и министерство все начали переписку как о Б-29.
The pilots at first thought it was a B-29, but he thought it was a Navy plane. And
it was a Navy plane.
Some of the people thought it was a B-29, and in memos they were getting it confused in communications that it was a B-29.
I'm not questioning what he is saying. I'm simply trying to find where between what I've been told and what he knows. I'm trying to get at the truth somewhere.
Ну вот, когда взлетели наши истребители, вышли за облака, передали, что видят нарушители.
When the planes broke through the cloud cover, they sent a signal back to the base that they saw the plane.
Это в 30 километрах от берега.
В сторону Советского Союза?
Ну, конечно, в сторону Союза.
That when they saw the plane, when they made contact... When they made contact with the plane, it was 30 kilometers inland over a city. The Soviet pilots flew alongside the American plane, gave the signal for it to land, and instead of obeying the signal and landing, the American plane turned towards the sea and increased speed.
Развалился уже в облаках или нет, сказать никто не может с летчиков. Ни один не может сказать.
But they gave one more last warning and signal for the plane to land, and the American pilots ignored the signal. So the Soviet planes fired on the American plane. It burnt very quickly and fell into the cloud cover. And none of the Soviet pilots can tell exactly what happened between when it hit the cloud cover and when it hit the water. All they can say is when they fired on it, it caught fire very quickly and burnt very quickly and fell into the cloud cover.
The weather had cleared enough to allow the Soviet fighter planes to land at their home base. He then called the commander of the Baltic Fleet and asked that ships be sent to the area where the plane went down. But the weather was far too rough.
So they continued with their paperwork following the storm and reported to Moscow that they had shot down a B-29.
Reynolds Howard asks again what time the shoot-down occurred.
He said probably around 10 o'clock in the morning.
But the time Reynolds Howard has from government documents is 5:30 Moscow time, a difference of 7.5 hours.
That's not correct. That can't be correct.
The Soviets began the search efforts the next day. The general wasn't involved in the search, but kept up on the progress.
An admiral from General Headquarters came and told him he had to find the wreckage, remove it from the water, and have something to show the General Secretary of the UN who was on his way to Moscow.
The Soviets were going to show the United Nations the plane's wreckage, tell the world what the U.S. was doing to embarrass the United States.
He then ran into the commander of the Baltic Air Force a short while later and asked him what happened, how did it work out in the end. He said, well, we found the plane and we've brought it ashore, but we're no longer showing it to the UN. We're not bringing the General Secretary here to see it. We found something very secret on it, and we're not showing it to anyone, and that's the end of the discussion. And it's difficult for him to say then if the plane broke up while it was still in the air, or if it broke up after it fell in the water.
Печально, но погибли.
They all died.
Никаких.
He said that there were no survivors, that if there had been survivors after the search was carried out, or if they had found any remains, they found no bodies at all, they found no remains. The storm was too bad, and they were all carried far away from the plane, and they didn't find anything at all. If he had found something, he would tell us about it now, and if they had found something, it would have gone through him.
Frankly, I have found that my government oftentimes is in, shall we say, lack of communication one part with another. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So there are so many conflicting reports of different kinds. When I'm seeking on Carolyn, I think right now that we're trying to put the pieces of the whole mystery puzzle together to try to figure out, thank you, honey, to try to figure out what actually did happen.
Вот там, где они говорят, в лагерях.
He said that's why he contacted you. That's why he got in touch with you. That's why he wanted to speak with you in person, to tell you the truth.
Reynolds Howard politely suggests that the KGB or the Border Patrol could have captured the crew without the general's knowledge.
If there had even been one survivor, one live pilot from that plane, he would have been happy for the families, for the people waiting at home. And he also said that person would have been used for propaganda purposes, because there's no reason he would have been put on television, he would have been paraded around. If they had found even one living person, they would have used him at that time. The witnesses that you have in the various reports, he said, have you found anyone that can tell you that they personally saw a firsthand account of one of these crew members? Is there any single firsthand account that you've come across of anybody saying that they've seen the crew members? That's what he would like to know.
No firsthand accounts, but that doesn't mean that I discredit secondhand ones. I can't necessarily accept the idea that the plane just, blew up in midair and everyone was lost, because actually he didn't see the plane hit the water. He doesn't know what happened to it then.
Поднятие боевой готовности очень положительную роль.
Said what he can say is the leadership wanted the plane found, wanted the plane brought out of the water, and he can say that when they did bring the plane up from the water, that the technology they found on the plane played a very significant role in dramatically increasing their defense capabilities for the borders of the Soviet Union.
General Shinkarenko says that it was Joseph Stalin himself who wanted the plane found, and everything was done to Stalin's orders.
А вот последний раз, 28 апреля.
Before heading back to Moscow, Jane Reynolds Howard has time to visit the Latvian coast, the Baltic Sea, where the privateer plane went down. She and Carolyn are still reflecting on what the general had to say.
And the timing of it, of when they say they shot it down and so forth, and the timing that the all the records that I've encountered are off by several hours. I realize that for every
episode that happens and there are people involved in it or near it, you get a different story from every person. So I think we still have a way to dig before we begin to get at the truth of this.
Carolyn vividly remembers the general's words, no survivors.
I thought I was going to faint. It was about that point that I had to get up and go get something to drink. And other than that, I don't know what to tell you. Because I don't know if that's the end of it or not. You know, and if he did die in the crash, then there's no way of even finding the remains. And if that's not the truth, which my mother evidently feels it isn't, then it means that this thing goes on. It's hard to know what's truth and what's fact and what's fiction. You know, 42 years later. So I don't know. I don't know how. It's probably going to be a while before I'm able to process everything here and know what I truly feel about everything. And it's nice to know that if my father did die here, I know where it is, at least.
After 2 weeks in Russia, Wisconsin Public Television said goodbye to Jane Reynolds Howard. Carolyn left soon after. Her mother would continue her search for another 8 weeks. Before we left, we asked her about General Shinkarenko, who insisted that there were no survivors from the privateer. He did claim that the Soviets salvaged the electronic equipment, which seems to back up the U.S. Navy memo, which says the same thing. But what about the crew? The general's confusion over the time of the shootdown and the type of plane makes Jane Reynolds Howard wonder how much the general really knows.
And it just doesn't all jibe. There are still a lot of things to be found out. And so I'm not accepting his version that Bob died after the plane was shot, because if he only saw it going down into the cloud cover, never saw it hit the water or anything like that, it's not proof to me that they're dead.
So the search continues, a search that includes U.S. government documents that suggest some of the crew of the privateer survived. To John Noble's claim in 1955 that 8 of the 10 privateer crew members were imprisoned in the Soviet labor camp at Vorkuta. To Igor Provalov's claim that Bob Reynolds was at the Soviet psychiatric hospital Sychevka in 1958. After 1958, the trail grows cold. Time is a factor in this 42-year-old mystery. In the end, Jane Reynolds Howard may never find in Russia what she's looking for, a live POW, or that one piece of paper with Bob Reynolds' name on it, or a marked gravesite. Yet she says she is not deterred by the lack of evidence or the slow pace of discovery.
We're a little ways along in a process that's going to take perhaps some time into the future. I would hope that there would be some answers within a few months, but if they're not, I'll be back here next year.
Thank you.
The preceding program was made possible by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through the Central Educational Network, with additional support from Carlson Travel Network in Madison.